I'm Dorothy Wickenden. On today's Politics and More podcast, The New Yorker's Evan Osnos talks with Elliot Ackerman and retired Admiral James Stavridis, the authors of the new novel, 2034. The book imagines a global conflict that begins with a dispute in the South China Sea.
Evan Osnos is a staff writer based in Washington, and he recently covered the endless presidential campaign. And for many years, Evan was based in China. He was the New Yorker's correspondent in Beijing, and he still writes for us about China and Xi Jinping's regime. That made Evan particularly interested in a new book called 2034. It's a work of fiction, a thriller in which an incident between the American and Chinese navies balloons into a catastrophe. Here's Evan.
The U.S. and China are the world's two superpowers, and their relationship has deteriorated quite sharply over the course of the last few years across a whole range of issues around technology and trade and defense and espionage. And whether or not you think one side is right or wrong, the reality is that the stakes are very, very high. One of the big places where that tension is playing out day to day in ways that Americans frankly don't really see very much is in the South China Sea.
China claims almost the entire area and for years has been militarizing the islands, constructing remote outposts.
It's a vast piece of the ocean that China claims as its own territory, rich with petroleum and minerals under the sea floor. But other nations, including the United States, contest that claim.
A U.S. aircraft carrier group entered the South China Sea. The group, led by the USS Theodore Roosevelt, will conduct routine operations to ensure freedom of the seas, build partnerships...
Admiral James Stavridis is one of the authors of the book 2034, and he's maybe not somebody you'd expect to be writing a gripping novel. Stavridis is a retired four-star naval officer. He worked as the Supreme Allied Commander at NATO. Admiral, how much of what's in this book draws on your own life experience?
The other day, Evan, I went back and added up all the days I've spent at sea on the deep ocean, out of sight at land. It's about 9.5 years when you add it all up. So this is my provenance, if you will. And certainly the opening scene of the book on the destroyer where the Commodore, who is in command of these three destroyers, is cutting a big wake, as we would say, drawing a big ocean through the South China Sea. That's quite real. I've done exactly that.
Elliot Ackerman co-wrote the novel. He's a journalist, a novelist, and he was a Marine in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Well, these freedom of navigation patrols are something that the U.S. Navy actively does through the South China Sea, where there is, you know, a bit of a dispute whether or not those are or not international waters. So we fly the flag down there. But, you know, in the book, the way we describe it specifically is it's the equivalent of, you know, driving donuts in your neighbor's yard if they move the fence a little bit too close to you. So it's sort of one of these, very, you know, aggressive actions, you know, in its way, depending on what side of the Freedom of Navigation Patrol you're on. And, at the outset with the book, you know, that was going to be the precipitating incident, something that happens on one of these Freedom of Navigation Patrols.
I will tell you, it's a pretty realistic opening scene right up to the moment when the ships get torpedoed and go to the bottom of the ocean. Let's hope that doesn't come true.
I want to be very clear. This is a work of speculative fiction. It's not real. But for anybody who follows these issues, it's a bit of creepy reading because it's based in the very real tensions between these two countries. I'm curious about how it was that you decided to take a subject as complex, as rich as the South China Sea. Frankly, it's the kind of thing that you see written about in reports in Washington and testimony at the Pentagon. And you decided that this actually should exist as a novel. Elliot, how did this happen?
Well, it was an idea that was originally Jim's. So, he had this idea of, you know, what if we could contribute to what in the past had been often speculative fiction around things like the Third World War. And it was sort of a genre that we hadn't seen a contribution to for a while. And so the idea of, you know, what if we were to write a speculative novel about what it looked like if the U.S. and China went to war. So he approached his book editor, Scott liked the idea, said, you know, it would be great if you teamed up with a novelist on this. And, oh, by the way, aren't you and Eliot friends? And it just felt like a very, very natural fit. So I was, you know, very enthusiastic about the project. We sat down. We said, let's see if we can write the first chapter, which is very much the chapter that's in the book right now. And we did. And it was a really fun collaboration. And I say the book is fun. I mean, we very much had the goal of wanting to make a readable, character-driven novel. You know, because, again, another point, you know, we were very aligned on in creating this character, these characters, where the villain in the book is war. This is the characters are coming at this conflict from a variety of point of views. All of them we aspire to tell sympathetically.
Let me just add to that, if I can, what I had in mind when I initially came up with the idea. It was films like Dr. Strangelove, books like The Bedford Incident, The Third World War by Sir John Hackett. These are not so much, in my view, speculative fiction as cautionary fiction. Think On the Beach by Neville Shute. And I think that part of the reason we avoided destroying the world in a Cold War was that we imagined our way to how terrible it could become. And that was something Eliot and I both agree on, I know, is that we're pretty good at intelligence. We need to get better at imagining. If we could have imagined the World Trade Towers going down, if we could have imagined a 20-year war in Afghanistan, maybe we could have reverse engineered it and killed it before it came to be true. That's kind of the fundamental point from my perspective about 2034.
Staying on that theme of imagining how things could go very wrong, one of the most chilling scenes in the book is when it becomes clear that China has developed cyber weapons that are way beyond anything the U.S. has. Could one of you read this scene? Does one of you have more high school acting experience than the other?
I think
anyone who could see this visually and see the 5'5" balding early 60s admiral or just turned 40 former skateboarding champion Eliot Ackerman is going to go for door number two. So Eliot, over to you.
Can we make sure that doesn't get cut in the final?
No, that's going in. That's going in. So, Eliot, page 39, if you will,
okay.
Please.
Right.
And just to set it up, this is a scene near the beginning of the book when the security officials in Washington are just discovering what's happening in the South China Sea. They're sort of panicking and trying to figure out how they can get the upper hand. And at that moment, they get a phone call from a Chinese official named Lin Bao.
Hello, said Chowdhury into the speaker.
Yes, I'm here,
came the otherworldly echo of Lin Bao's voice on the line. He sounded impatient, as though he were being forced to continue a conversation he'd tired of long ago.
Let me repeat your position to assure that I understand it. For decades, your Navy has sailed through our territorial waters. It has flown through our allies' airspace. And today, it has seized one of our vessels. But you maintain that you are the aggrieved party, and we are the ones who must appease you?
The room became so quiet that for the first time, Chowdhury noticed the slight buzzing of the halogen light bulbs overhead. That is the position of this administration, answered Chowdhury, needing to swallow once to get the words out. However, if you have a counterproposal, we would, of course, take it into consideration. More silence. Then Lin Bao's exasperated voice.
We do have a counterproposal.
Good, injected Chowdhury, but Lin Bao ignored him, continuing on.
If you check, you'll see that it's been sent to your computer.
Then the power went out. It was only a moment, a flash of darkness. The lights immediately came back on. And when they did, Lin Bao wasn't on the line anymore. There was only an empty dial tone. you could imagine as we enter this first chapter and there's this altercation in the South China Sea and it's looking like it could become increasingly kinetic, that the crescendo at the end of that chapter might be some, you know, explosive incident. But it's not. The lights just go out. The Chinese, in effect, blink the entire East Coast. And so just from a creative standpoint, it was, how do we show the reader what this looks like? How do we make them feel how chilling this is?
Eliot says it exactly right. We are reaching for ways that people can understand the seriousness of the concerns here, simply because that vulnerability is explosively expanding for two very quick reasons. One is the expansion of the threat surface. 10 years ago, there were 7 billion people on the planet and 7 billion devices connected to the internet. Today, there are still roughly 7 billion people on the planet and 40 billion devices. That is an enormous threat surface. And secondly, it is China's ability to move at speed in this world. They are accelerating rapidly.
You know, the spirit of this book is, as we've said, very much the idea that imagining can become a deterrent. You know, as Jim said, we know we have plenty of intelligence, we have plenty of hardware, but what we often lack is imagination. And then also the imagination that as you enter one of these high-tech wars, you know, perhaps without giving too much away, you realize that many of your low-tech capabilities that you've allowed to atrophy actually become the essential capability that you need to win the war.
You've both described this extraordinary, what feels to me like a very fragile combination of people and events and decisions that can lead us either in the desperately wrong direction or, one hopes, in the right direction. We've talked a lot about what could go wrong in this relationship between the U.S. and China. What could go right? Help us see that path a bit.
I'd love to. And, you know, I want to say that the book is not good guy U.S., bad guy China. It's not the theme of the work here. And my own strategy for dealing with China, if I boiled it down to a couple of words, would be confront where we must, but cooperate wherever we can. We must confront China on the claims of the South China Sea. And we must confront China, my view, on gross human rights violations, for example, Uyghurs in China. We must confront on that. But there are so many places we can cooperate. One is climate. We're not going to solve the environmental challenges we have, which are immense, unless the U.S. and China can cooperate together. Second would be the pandemic. And I'm not talking about the current pandemic. I'm talking about the next pandemic. And newsflash, there will be another pandemic. And then third and finally, I would say humanitarian work, medical diplomacy. Both nations operate hospital ships. Think of the power of putting the capabilities of the U.S. and China together to do that. And that sounds perhaps to some kind of Pollyanna-ish, except 2 years ago, the U.S. Navy ship Mercy, our big, beautiful West Coast hospital ship, operated right alongside China's hospital ship. We can do this. And so confront where we must, but try and find those zones of cooperation. I think that's crucial if we're going to avoid the scenario we lay out in 2034.
Thank you to you both, Admiral James DeVries, Eliot Ackerman. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Evan.
You can read Evan Osnos's work on politics, China, and many other subjects on NewYorker.com. He spoke with retired Admiral James Stavridis and Eliot Ackerman. Their new book is called 2034.